Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, had a prior commitment as director of the Hazleton Betty Ford Clinic, which is a reminder to me of all of the good works that he and his team does for our community. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, our guest today is Beth Terry. Beth is a resilience and stress expert, as well as a keynote speaker and author. She has held executive positions in corporate America in many fields and has spoken to hundreds of thousands of people in six countries. Beth has been in the business world long enough to know that trendy training programs, they come and go, but practical and information, that practical information sticks and works. Now, she hosted the TV show Making Your Life Work, featuring experts in various fields from accounting to construction to human resource challenges. She's the author of five books. Her latest, Raising Resilient Kids, Notes for Parents, Step-Parents, and Teachers, is the topic of our show today. Beth, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it is great to have you on, and I had a chance to read through the book, and I love how positive it is. I love how it really focuses on resilience, but it does it from the standpoint of being so uplifting. So I want everybody to know out there that it just really gives you a good feeling.
Thank you. And we did wind up changing the title because there were several other titles like that. So now we call it Resilience Not Included, Helping Your Kids Learn to Bounce Back.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And what we'll do at the end of the show is we'll change that on our website. So for those of you that after the show want to go to the website, if you go to the Answers for the Family website and pull it up, we will make that change as well. So Beth, I know that the book has stories from your personal 30 years of raising other people's kids. How and why did you get started raising other people's kids?
Well, I found out when I was in college that I could not have children, and I had to wrestle with that, and it was hard, and I just said, well, this is what God plans for me, so I will surrender and let it be whatever it is. And then I fell in love with a man who had three kids, and he was quite a bit older than me, so the kids were already 8, 11, and 15, and I had to learn at that point what raising kids was all about. And I have to admit, I didn't do a very good job. I allowed some things to go on that my particular way I was raised said not to do. But I let it go anyway. I let them be spoiled. I let them have their own way a lot of times. So I'm sure you have audience members that have been through that, you know, where they sit back and let the kids have their way and let the kids be the boss. And I did that. So I learned that didn't work. Well, so that was step one.
Well, I was going to say, and I don't think you're alone. And I've always thought that it's so strange that, in our schools, our high schools, that, it's mandatory that we take reading. It's mandatory that we do history and we learn science and we take you know, a gym class, and then it's mandatory to take some sort of elective. So it's like home ed or metal shop or auto shop or something like that. And it amazes me that it isn't mandatory that we take raising children.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I knew a lot because I grew up in a family of eight kids, and there were things within my gut I knew wouldn't work, but I was younger than my husband. I was younger than his ex-wife, and they had their way of doing things, and I just sat back and I watched, and I think I did a disservice to those kids, because when they got older, they had a lot of problems. They had a lot of, you know, they're good kids. They've figured it out, but they had to go through some therapy. They had to go through some, jump through some hoops that I don't think they'd have to now if they had been raised by me the second time.
Well, so. but you know, I mean, it's a great point. We all learn, you know, when you talk to parents that have had many children, most of them will tell you, I learned so much between child one and child two, or child two and child three, that, you know, right, that they feel like it's a constant learning process. You know, we have
it is, and I think parents need to know that it's okay to make mistakes, and not everybody knows what they're doing. And, you know, go pick up books, read things, listen to shows like this, do your homework, because it'll make your life so much easier in the long run.
And I think that's such a great point about it's okay to make mistakes. And if I can add to that, and it's okay to share with your children that you made a mistake. I think that's important,
yes,
too, where parents will make a mistake, but they're like, well, I'm not going to tell them I messed up. No, tell them that you're learning as well, and apologize for it. You know, I didn't really handle that correctly. I know there's a better way to do that. Let's talk about what that is.
Yeah, and also one of the tricks I used was, okay, so if you were the mom, how would you have handled it?
That's a great one.
Oh, sometimes they're a lot stricter than we are. You know, well, I would have taken away my phone. I say, oh, that's a good idea. I'll write that down for next time.
And all of a sudden, the look on their face is like, oops.
But I think that then after raising those first three and for many different reasons, the marriage did not last, but I'm still great friends with my ex. And then because I was a member of a church, of my church in Hawaii, I was a godparent. And so I found myself becoming a godmother / it's not really foster mother, but I use the word foster on the mainland because we don't have the Hanai system like on the mainland like we do in Hawaii. Hanai is pretty much parents saying, I can't do this right now. Take her. And so you take her, you take the child, you're her godmother, you take her, and she moves in with you, or he moves in with you. You work through some things, you support the parent, you support the kid, and then you give them back, which is the nice part. So I wound up with five of those. And when I started to work with these kids, some of whom came complete with probation officers, I really had to be a grown-up. I had to grow up and take charge and be the parent. And I think you and I talked about, or several of us at the NATSEP conference were talking about that the parents have to be the grown-up. That's the point, you know, of having children.
No, you're absolutely right. And I've been quoted as telling many parents, your child does not need a 45-year-old best friend. Be a parent.
Yes, yes. And they don't want you to be their 45-year-old best friend. They really don't. I think kids that act out are actually jumping up and down inside going, please stop. Please tell me what to do. I'm only 10.
Right. Give me structure.
Do the math.
Yes. You had mentioned that you got started quickly being a stepmother. Well, we have a message that's coming in from a listener, and this one says, I have been a stepmother to four children ages 11 to 16 for 3 years now. My problem is that their birth mother is constantly planting negative issues about me with them. The two oldest, in their teens, returned from their week with her really treating me badly. It takes all week to get them back to normal again, then we start the next round, and the next round, etc. My husband is tired, working insane hours, trying to support the families. I feel so badly complaining to him. What do you suggest that I can do? And would your book be a good help to me or maybe to some of the rest of us in this family?
Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly what I had. That's exactly the situation I had. I don't think it's that unusual what he's going through. And someone actually suggested I should have made this title be about blended families, but it's not just blended families. So here's what I did. First of all, we had expectation conversations. We would sit down with all of the kids and we said, here's what we expect when you are in this house. We want you to love your mother. We want you to obey your mother when you are at your mother's house. When you are in this house, we have rules for here. And that's how we're going to do this because it's the only way we can do it. So that's step one. First of all, here are the expectations. Here are the house rules. And the book has a list of house rules. It has an expectations conversation and how it goes. Second of all, never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say anything bad about the biological parent on either side. What I would do, the kids would come over and they'd say, Mommy says she's going to come over and she's going to kill you and she's going to bust your head. Oh, Mommy says she's going to let the air out of your tires. And I would say, oh, wow, it sounds like your mom's having a hard time. Let's pray for your mom. You know how when you have a stomach ache and you don't feel good, sometimes you don't act very good? Mommy has a heartache. So we are going to pray for Mommy, but Mommy's house rules are Mommy's, and we have house rules here. So we aren't going to second guess what Mommy's doing or why. What we know is when you're home here, this is what we're going to do. Okay, I love you, and then I'd hug them.
I like
that. So it's so important. Listen, my kids are now in their 30s. My four kids, the four that I did this with, and I cry. I mean, I put it at the back of the book, the letter that they wrote to me when I said, what did I teach you? They so appreciated that I just taught them to love their mother, to understand her, and I didn't beat her up. I didn't take the bait. And I didn't go there. And I think we have to be the grown-up. We have to just say, yeah, sounds like she's having a hard time. Next. And boom, you move. You move into the next thing. Does that make sense?
Not only does it make sense, but I think that there is also an additional benefit to that that may not be as immediately apparent. Many times, those things are brought in and they're exaggerated. And they're trying to get a reaction. And I think that by showing that you're not going to get the reaction, that may also help with that same situation that many families talk about where they say that not only are these things being passed on, but then when they talk to the other parent, they find out that's not exactly how it went, but yet they're pushing a button so that the other parent reacts in a certain way. When you don't react that way, guess what? There's no reason to do it to begin with. So, yes, I agree completely.
Oh, they're manipulative little things. Look, you just... children learn how to get what they need. And if we don't play that game, then they go do something else. I know that my name was Miss Thing in the other house. And that's fine. And one of my reactions once when one of the 5-year-old came home and said, Mommy says she's going to beat you up. And I said, oh, well, one of these days I'm going to hug your mommy because I am so grateful that she brought you into the world. And I will always love your mommy because she gave birth to you. And the 5-year-old looked at me and went, I don't think right now's a very good time. And, you know, it's like you're shifting the energy when you do it. But let me give this mother another, this stepmom another idea.
Oh, please.
I figured out what was going on. And I knew that it wasn't just the mother, it was the grandmother, because the mother lived with the grandmother. And so I knew that there was all this massive drama. And I would send bright, happy kids there, and I'd get gray, drained kids back. So I said, okay, enough. I told my husband, we're not doing this anymore. We're not going to buy into the gray, drained children. So I would put on dance music, and I'd move all the couch aside, and I'd, as soon as one would come through the door, I'd grab her backpack, throw it on the ground, and go, you're next! And I'd grab her, and I'd start doing Jitterbug with her. And we'd have rock and roll, and Freeway of Love, and I'd have Huey Lewis in the News, you know, and I would get all of this music going. So the kids would come through the door, and I would just shift their energy right away. I wouldn't let it be about, and I'd say, you know, you're going to see your mom again in 5 days. It's okay. Everything's good. She's fine. Don't worry about it. She's a grown-up. And then I would just change the energy. And it took a little while. You just have to stay with it. Took a while. And then pretty soon they got to where they expected it. And if I just didn't buy into the drama, like you just said, they have to go do something else. Oops, well, that's not working, so do this now.
Oh, I love it. And on a side note, for some of the millennials out there that are listening, you can Google Huey Lewis in the News, Huey Lewis in the News, and figure out what that music is about. As you're saying, I'm thinking,
it's the heart of rock and roll. It's a great song.
Exactly.
Go look it up on YouTube.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. They should go look it up, because as soon as you said it, I'm going, I remember that one. So,
yeah.
Well, now you've shared a little bit about the situation that you found yourself into. You were instant parent, and then, as you said, you know, that situation changed. But then, when you found yourself again with four children under the age of 10, what steps did you take to make sure that you did it differently this time?
First thing I did, I sat down with my husband and I said, all right, here's the deal. Before I will even say yes to marrying you, you and I are going to have a long, complicated, expanded expectations conversation. And I'm a minister's daughter, and I know better. I should have done that with my first husband. And we sat down and we said, all right, I expect this from you as a father. What do you expect from me as a mother? I expect this from your children. What do you expect from your children? I expect that you'll back me up. What do you expect from me? And we went back and forth for a long time. We actually wrote it down. And one of the expectations was, you are the biological parent. I'm not. If I die or if you die, I don't get to be in these kids' lives anymore. You're in their life forever. So what do you want from me? And what we came up with was, he has the final say. And I think, and you know, I hate to say this because this is women's lib and all that kind of stuff. There are some women say, absolutely not. But man doesn't always get the final say. If he is the biological father and you're the stepmother, he gets the final say. And if that's not okay with you, don't marry him. Don't take this on. So I said to him, I'm going to give you as much feedback as I can behind the scenes, but in front of the children, I will always back you up.
I like that.
I think that's so important.
Well, so what are some of the things that you did again when you find yourself now in this, you know, in this next situation? You now have four under 10. I think a lot of people out there are probably shaking their heads and going, "You had four under 10 at the same time? How did that work?"
And I was 42 years old. I was taking on they were 5-year-old. Well, they were 4-year-old twins, a 6-year-old, and 9-year-old when I met him. And so what we did is we started having Sunday night family meetings. And he was a police officer. And he was also military, so he was very organized. And he really, he just is an amazing man and an amazing father. And so he and I would sit with the kids, and we'd have these four little kids sitting on the couch, and the twins' little feet just stuck straight out. You know, they're sitting there, and they don't know if they're in trouble or not. And we said, okay, we're going to have a Sunday night meeting every single week from now on. And I miss time management trainer. What? Mm-hmm. So I'm a time management trainer, so I bought them all books. So they all had little time management goal setting books. So even the 5-year-old, they were 5 by the time we got married, would sit there in their little scroll and draw pictures and whatever. So we said, first of all, we want you to write your goals for the week. Mm-hmm. And we would take a few minutes, and they would think about what they wanted to have happen this week. And my husband and I would do the same thing. Then we would say, now let's share our goals. So they would say, you know, I want to do this in school, or I have a math test. This is how you find out what's going on. Yep. Yeah. How many kids do you have?
I have 2 boys and a bonus daughter. I have 3.
So you know that you don't always know what's going on in their life, right?
Well, you got that right.
Well, this is a sneaky way to find out. Mm-hmm. Because this family meeting on Sunday night is when you find out, oh, by the way, on Friday I have to bring 53 cupcakes for the class. That's when you find it out.
Well, actually, in my situation, I would find that out first because I was the room dad. So I would find out things.
Oh, okay.
I would find out things from the teacher before the kids would share it with me. They'd bring it up, and I'd go, "I already know because I'm now in charge of bringing them." So,
well, a lot of parents aren't room dads or room moms. So we would do this thing, but then the trick is this, and I think parents benefit when they are willing to have the conversation. And actually, you can hear me doing this on my website on BethTerry.com. I've got a link to my YouTube channel. And on my YouTube channel, there's something I call good, good input. Mm-hmm. And you can listen to this. It's just about 3-4 minutes long. What I did with the kids is we'd say, okay, you're doing so well in school. And we are so proud of you. You've been getting your chores done. Now, Alicia, we have gotten some information that you might have been hitting one of your friends at school. Is that true? And so it's good, good input. You give them a compliment. You give them another compliment. You say, now let's talk about something that needs to be addressed. Instead of what parents normally do, which is, okay, look, I'm sick and tired of getting a call from the teacher, mm-hmm. and you beat them up, you know, not physically, but yelling at the kids or making them wrong is going to make them shrink into themselves, and then they're not ever going to tell you anything.
Well, that's a great
point. So you take them through that process.
Yeah, I love that. And I think then to add one to that is that one of the things that we did was, when there's something came from the school, is to, you know, start out and go, you know, what was the most interesting thing that happened at school today, you know, and get an answer.
Oh, that's good.
You know, and then what was the most challenging thing that happened at school today, and then get an answer. And if it wasn't what was brought up to us from the teacher, then we would go to, well, how did you deal with this situation? So we're sort of suggesting, was it interesting, was it challenging, or what was it? And to get them to talk about it. But again, you're right, it's still to get them to talk about something else first, and generally something that's very positive. So yes, I love it.
And it's also, one of my rules was catch them doing things right.
Oh, wait, I think you and I are mind melding right now. No.
Kids do what you pay attention to. Why would you constantly criticize? Because then they will do it again.
Absolutely. Now you said you were living in Hawaii, so obviously you're familiar with the CAM schools, or for those that don't know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, they're one of my clients. Yes. Okay. Love those people.
Okay. If you go back to their library, there is a series of books that was done in regards to raising children. And if you look closely on the cover of one of them, you will see a picture of me, and the term is catch them doing something good.
Oh, I love it.
So, yes, I am such a firm believer in that. It's a matter of catch them doing something good.
And it's also very helpful to remember, and this gets back to the woman listening who has the question about stepkids. First of all, if you're in a stepchildren situation, those kids deep down inside believe the divorce is their fault. And even if it's not a divorce situation, that one of the parents passed away, those kids have some kind of weird thing in their head that they had something to do with things going haywire. So kids often believe they are not lovable, especially in divorce situations. And the temptation is to yell at them. The temptation is to take out your frustration with the biological mother. The temptation is to only focus on the things they're doing wrong. We can't do that. If you do that, you are going to raise someone who's really messed up. And if you want to think about the long-term consequences, it's going to cost you a lot of money in therapy. So don't be that parent. Catch them doing things right. Thank you so much for doing your chores. Thank you so much for respecting me enough to letting me know that's going on. Thank you so much for looking out for your little sister. Like that.
Well, and for our listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. And now, Beth, I'm going to cue you. Our guest is Beth Terry. We're going to take a break. The book is...
It is Resilience Not Included, Helping Your Kids Learn to Bounce Back.
All right. And while we're on break, if you would like, you can go to www.bethterry.com, open up another window, and follow along with us. We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are speaking with Beth Terry, and we are talking about resilience. So, Beth, we've talked a little bit about how you got into the situation to where you were helping other people's kids. Now, let's talk a little bit about what motivated you to write a book about all this.
Actually, you did. I was going, when you called after my speech at NatSAP in Tucson, you wanted my 101 ways to make your life easier, and I took a look at the book and I said, boy, that is so outdated. I even have advice about pagers in there. The millennials will roll their eyes. So I said, you know, I've got so many columns in my blogs. I have two different blogs, and I have my 101 Ways book, and I've written columns in Honolulu newspapers. So I gathered all the columns together, and I sat down and meditated on everything, and I said, this is a book. Let me just do this. So you're the reason that I wrote Resilience Not Included. So thank you.
Wow, you're very welcome. And That was a lot. Well, first of all, I didn't know that. But secondly, for most of us, trying to put together a book takes a very long time. And I know after hearing you speak, I think you had already had four books that you had done. And I was just so impressed with the information you were putting out there for all of us at whatever walk of life we were in, that I just couldn't wait to get you on our show. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I love the fact that I'm somehow part of a motivation that that got you to write another one.
Yes, and I actually am just now emailing Janet the copies, Nook, Kindle, and PDF copies of the book so that you will have the very latest version, because we had a couple of corrections, and so you will now have them. I'll have Janet send those to you.
Well, I thank you very much. And again, for those out there, I would assume this is also going to be on your website as well?
Yes, those are on the website, and I actually have a Mother's Day special right now, so they're very inexpensive, and I think it's a wonderful book. I know there's a lot of information out there. I just know that I put this together with a practical, easy to look at, easy to read the checklists, easy to just say, okay, I can post these house rules on my refrigerator. This will work. So I tried to make it as easy as possible, because I know when you're a busy mom and you're a stepmom or a busy dad and you're trying to get things organized, you don't have time to wade through pages and pages and pages of stuff. So I made it really simple.
Well, and I had that same feeling, and I was going to mention about the situation for Mother's Day, and then obviously in June becomes Father's Day, but this really is something that I think would be a great gift for a new parent, either new parent in the sense that they've just had a child, or a new parent as you became, which was instant parent of multiple kids. So in either situation, I think this would be something that that whoever received it would much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well,
yeah, that I have a friend down the street that just had her first child, so she was one of my readers to make sure that this made sense and it was practical, and she just loves it. She said she's already using it for a couple of things. She just had a baby, but she said, I'm going to sit down with my husband. We're going to have an expectations conversation. So that's what we want to do, is make sure that we are on the same page. If we're raising kids, you've got to be on the same page, or the kids will play you against each other.
Well, and I think on the same page is a perfect way to explain it, because you talk in the book about like the driver's contract. You talk about contracts. Well, you talked about having people having the kids write down their goals for that particular week. And as someone who has set up family contracts for my own family, as well as clients, tell us about the driver's contract, and where did you get it from, and how did you use it?
Well, we had one of those shocking conversations where we suddenly realized our oldest girl was going to be 16 in a couple of weeks. My husband was a police officer, and I am a trainer and a professional speaker. I do keynotes, and I go into companies and do training sessions. So his car was the police car. In Hawaii, the family car is a police car. You take it down to the police station and they put all the bells and whistles and sirens and buttons and all of that in the car. And then he gets a stipend for the car. And then my car was a training center on wheels. I had flip charts, overhead projectors. I had all of the things, the toys that I used in my seminars for exercises, packed into this car. So my husband and I are looking at each other and saying, oh dear, which car does she drive? Because we can't afford a new car for her. And he was having these flashbacks of what would happen if she's driving down the street with six of her best teenage friends and one of them pushes the SWAT team button on the console.
Oh, no.
And I'm saying, what if those kids decide it'd be really fun to take all my things out of the back of the car and have fun trying to figure out what Auntie Beth uses these for? So I said, well, okay, we've got to do something about this. So I wrote a driver's agreement, a driving contract. And I used the frame. The frame I use in conversation is you tell them the desired end result. You tell them what's in it for you. Then you tell them why we're going to do this, and you tell them how we're going to do this. So I wrote the contract with that in mind, and so I said, we love you, and this is how it starts. Mm-hmm. Because we love you, and we want you to live long enough to watch your grandchildren graduate from college, we've prepared this driving agreement. So that's the overarching concept. Actually, privately, we said to each other, you know, we don't want to turn them all into juvie. We'll send them to NATSAP. We'll send them to your school. So, because parents get scared and then they say things they shouldn't say. So we wanted to say, look, we love you. We want you to be safe. Mm-hmm. So here's a driver's agreement. You know what's interesting? After we went through the driver's agreement, our oldest said, and all of her sisters were sitting there listening to our conversation, and she said, this is really cool. Can I put it in the glove box in both cars? And we went, yeah, why?
Sure.
Because then if my friends want to do anything, I just hand them the contract.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Very smart.
So then it's not her that's telling them to stop. So the contract is, here are the rules and regulations of driving this 4,000-pound vehicle down the road. Here are expectations, and then here are the consequences. So it has all three parts to it.
Now there's probably a bunch of listeners that have teenagers between the ages of like 14 and 16 that are saying, is this in the book? Because we probably need it just for that.
It's not in the book, and that would have been a really good idea. However, if they order the book, I will send them a free copy.
There you go. Got that one. I think that is so important, especially in this day and age. And, you know, we deal with a lot of teenagers that get in accidents. In California, they had to pass a law that, you know, that once they get their license, they couldn't drive with other kids because we were getting so many accidents where whoever got their license first would pack in as many kids as possible. And then there would be a serious accident. So the law here is now set up to where you get your license. But for that first, and I don't remember exactly, I want to say that first year that you have your license, you know, you can't have but like one other person with you. And I think it needs to be a relative, a sibling. It was that serious because we had so many really bad accidents. But you know, what you're talking about right now is another way that they could solve those things, is let's communicate, let's set up a contract, let's make sure that they know why they can only do this in the car or why you don't do that in the car, just comes down to good communication.
Well, and the very first, number one on the driving agreement says, we expect you will remember that the vehicle you have borrowed is our means of making a living. Honor that vehicle and any of our items left inside of it.
That's very smart. I like
it. Now, remember, a police car might have a gun in the glove box. And more, we always would make sure that we would pull that out, but you never know. Mm-hmm. That could be, and so we would lock the glove box and we would have a conversation, but we also did gun safety with all the kids, because you can't just hope they'll figure it out. And so we had some, you know, we had a very serious situation. And if you have the buttons, if you press one of the buttons inside a police car, you'll have the SWAT team surrounding your car in about 5 minutes max.
Well, now I also...
So we had to scare them. Mm-hmm.
Now, I also know in the book you have a quote from a police officer about timeouts. Is this quote from your husband? And tell us a little bit about
yes.
that. So tell us about it.
We had some situations where we had to do some serious timeouts, and they would whine that their mother never gave them timeouts, and why are we having timeouts here? And we are big believers in catching things early, doing a quick timeout, explaining why you did the timeout when the timeout is over, and showing them that this was kind of a bad decision they made that led to the timeout. And one day, when we were in the middle of one of these exchanges with one of the kids, my husband said, "Look, if you don't get enough timeouts as a child, you will get them as a grown-up."
I love it.
I said, I've got to write that down. That's brilliant. That should be posted up on the medians on the freeway. You should put that on those signs on the California freeways, you know, because the cops will give you a timeout. Your teacher will give you a timeout. Your husband will divorce you and give you a timeout if you act like a spoiled brat. I mean, people give you timeouts if you don't learn to behave when you're younger.
Oh, that's a great point. And you're right. Yeah, your employer will give you a timeout that is without pay, you know. So, So yes.
Exactly.
Now, we've got about 10 minutes now. I love the concept of resilience. I love the idea of the fact that we're starting at a young age. But what do you believe is the net benefit of raising more resilient kids? Tell us what your bigger picture is.
It's a huge picture. First of all, we have now, and I don't mean to sound judgmental, but I'm watching some very non-resilient people graduating from college who are now going into the workforce, who aren't able to put up with the pressures of life. So the net benefit to the children is by giving them better training, by being willing to be the grown-up, by setting rules, expectations, understanding and communication with them early on, you are allowing them to grow up and become contributing members of society. We need them to be healthy. Mm-hmm. We need a world with people who are healthy, able to be accountable, able to be responsible, able to bounce back, who won't crumble and melt under the smallest amount of pressure. The net benefit to the parents is they're not going to come back and live with you when they've got three kids and expect you to raise them.
Yep, I know.
Simple.
I know. No, and you're right. And to look at it from an industry standpoint, as somebody who has a company that transports at-risk youth to a variety of wonderful programs all across the country, there are more and more programs that have popped up for young adults, or what some people call the failure to launches. But that's exactly what it is that you're talking about, is that they did not gain the resilience necessary to go out in the world and make it on their own. I know that my dad, I used to have a lunch with my dad, you know, from the time in which I had moved out, you know, and I couldn't wait to move out and, you know, move in my girlfriend and get a job and do all of these things. But I'd have lunch with him once a week, and we would talk about things. You know, I would ask him all of these questions about life and all the different things. And I got so much great wisdom. But one time we were sitting there, and I'm asking him this question, and he paused, and he did the old, you know, like you touch your chin, like you're thinking about the answer. And then he looks at me, and he says, "You know, that's just one of those big guy questions you're going to have to figure out on your own. We can't keep doing these things for you." Wow.
Good.
You know,
good dad.
Yeah, but it makes so much sense. You know, it's, you know, we have to learn through some of our mistakes. And yes, as parents, we are going to want to keep them from making huge mistakes. But some of the smaller mistakes we're going to learn from, we're going to get better, we're going to then become better adults. So I couldn't agree with you more.
It's called learning how to adult.
See, there's another sign.
And I'll tell you, I have to tell you, as I get older, you know, I've been doing a lot of motivational training. I've been doing how to manage change, getting out of overwhelm, handling stress, all of this. So this getting back into the parenting mode is sort of a return to my roots when I first started my business 35 years ago. And one of my greatest frustrations is I don't know how to get to the millennials who need me. And that is another one of the reasons when you asked me to be on your radio show, I was so excited, because I want to get to them before they're youth at risk. I want to get to them before they raise children who are at risk. I don't know how to get to them because I'm old. I'm a 66-year-old woman. I know I don't look my age, but I am. And I want to wrap my arms around them and go, look, here's Life Class 101. Here's how to launch. Here's how to raise your kids. Here's what you need to do to have a healthy relationship with your sweetheart. Here's how to have an expectations conversation. I don't know how to reach them, because when I try to speak at the colleges and universities, and you've probably had the same experience, I am handed a list of things I cannot say. And that is so stifling, because some of the things we need to say are uncomfortable. Some of the things we need to say are just simple truths that, even if they make you want to go to your safe place and hide, this is life, and life doesn't have a safe room. And we need, as adults, especially as the grandparents, we need to be able to spread these messages. And it's becoming harder and harder to do it. So if you have any ideas how I can do that, I would love to partner with you to do that.
I will take you up on that. And at some point in time off the air, let's definitely talk about that. You made me think in a different direction when you brought that up. And so I want to plant a seed out there to the parents who are looking for a college for their, you know, for their, what, you know, 18-year-olds, or for the 20-year-olds or so that are already in college. Think about that, what Beth just said, and say to yourself, why would a college not want somebody to talk about resilience and touch on some of those things that might be a little bit more difficult? And if that's the case, speak up and tell them, no, we want this. We want things that are going to allow us to be better adults, to be more resilient. And if it means that we have to hear some things that aren't exactly politically correct, well, so be it. So we need to take control, and we can't have people out there. I mean, to me, that is trying to take away a freedom of speech that should not be taken away. So I know I went off on a tangent there for a moment, but thank you for sharing.
No, but you're right. Yeah, it's a huge concern, and I want these kids to make it.
Yes.
I want them, I have so much information, and so do you, and I want to just open up the tops of their heads and just pour it in, you know? And I've thought about becoming a consultant, do parenting classes. I used to do classes on how to interview for a job for youth at risk, for the Hawaii Youth at Risk group. I have all kinds of things, and I know that I'm not alone. I know that there are so many people my age that are standing here with their arms open saying, please let us help you become a grown-up. Please help us help you learn to adult, because somebody has to be the grown-up. Somebody has to be responsible, and parenting, as John Roseman says, parenting is not a popularity contest. Yep. This is about turning these people into accountable, responsible, resilient adults. That's what I'm all about.
Well, we've got another listener question, and we've only got about a minute, so I'll try to get through this quick. I read your comment about self-respect being more important than self-esteem. I don't quite understand what the difference is. Could you please explain this in more detail? This is from Mary in Oregon.
Self-respect is, I trust myself and I feel good enough about myself that I respect me. It's not about how good I look in a selfie. It's not that everybody out there loves me. Self-esteem is too often seen as what other people think of you. Self-respect is what you think of yourself. If I have self-respect, I don't get in the back seat of a car with a guy. If I have self-respect, I don't take a hit on that, on the drugs that they're trying to give me. If I have self-respect, I am willing and able to say, no, this is not good for me or my future. So self-respect is about recognizing your own personal value as a human being and remembering who you are. Self-esteem has become how I just feel really good about myself. And those are two completely different things. The more self-respect you have, the higher your healthy self-esteem becomes on your own, not because someone else says it to you.
You know, I couldn't have closed the show any better. Beth, thank you so much for being with us again. She has 5 books out. Go to BethTerry.com. If you're driving, again, you always know you can go to AnswersForTheFamily.com, and we will have all of our information. Again, Beth, thank you so much for coming on and for everything that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful. I will come back happily anytime you want.
You got it. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday when we are joined by Arlene Drake, author of Carefrontation, Breaking Free from Childhood Trauma. And please do me a favor. Share our show with at least 2 friends or family members that can benefit from the great guest that we've had on the show. All you have to do is send them a link to our archives of past interviews at AnswersForTheFamily.com. You may also subscribe to the show or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. Thank you to all of you listening. Be good human beings, and remember to make a positive difference in the lives of others every chance you get.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.